I watch price action a lot, and I've learned some things from watching, but I'm not sure if that's what you mean. Not familiar with the lingo. Thanks. From John. This is probably an amateur question, but what do you look at to watch the order flow? A level 2 screen? Thanks. From Invnin. Reading the tape is kind of tricky because of the lack of good material to study. Without knowing what to look for, we end up just looking for dancing numbers on the screen. Also, even in your blog, I sometimes get confused about what is reading the tape and what is watching the order flow. From another John. John, may I ask, what do you use to read the tape? Is there a specific platform you use, or is it the level 2 screen? And then I received this email. Hello, Mike. My question has to do with tape reading skills, a question you obviously get a lot. First, a little about my background. I have spent 16 years on Wall Street as an institutional salesperson. That's probably my problem. And have started, run, and sold my own research broker-dealers. I have always let the prop traders and market makers do their thing, of which, admittedly, I knew little about, but always tried to hire the best people I could find to manage it. That being said, I have recently, since last November, began to day trade. I have successfully been able to block out the fundamentals, perceptions, and learn to read the charts, but I am having difficulty reading the tape fast enough for it to make a difference in my trading. I can watch the level 2 on the NASDAQ stocks and get a feel for demand but as a predictive value, but... help! It's frustrating that such a skill eludes me, since I know it's so helpful. What can I do to hone that particular skill? And so I sat down to answer the reader's questions. I wrote some stuff, wrote some more stuff, and then stopped. Can I explain how to read the tape in a blog? No. Can I explain how to read the tape in a written chapter? Nope. Alan Farley of TheStreet.com wrote, "Reading the tape must be learned through personal experience and long observation. It is too difficult with just the written word, with too many variables and too much to share to accurately teach how to read the tape. Start by listening to this chapter. But keep in mind that nothing can top experience. Don't give up." If I may use yet another analogous example from the sports world, learning to read the tape is like adding LeBron James to your favorite NBA team. It will improve your trading that much. Videos, written materials, individual questions, more videos, and practice are required to learn this important skill. I cannot emphasize it enough. Just to give you an example of the complexity of this topic, we created a Reading the Tape training program for our commercial website. I was swamped with work, so I asked G-Man to develop the curriculum. He sent me back a rough draft with 15-plus written lectures and 30-plus videos. And after a brainstorming session, I sent him off with more videos to create and lectures to write to best teach this skill. Over many weekends, after he shook off the effects of a hard drinking night on the town in New York City, he locked himself into our offices and cut tape after tape to partially develop this training program. But he did it. Here's a bit of what we came up with. The tape talks to you. We were in a video review session with our June 2009 class. The best of breed, whom we recruited for a year in 2008-2009. We were watching some nondescript play of a slow-moving stock, slow to me, that is, and I blurted, "Bye." And then the following dialogue ensued. Bella: "Why didn't you buy there?" Trainee: "I am not sure." Classmate: "Bella, why is this stock a buy?" Bella: "You want to buy the stock. It is strong. It is in an uptrend. The stock has potential to trade much higher. The market is strong. You want to buy into a pullback. Well, that was the buy signal." Classmate: "What was?" Bella: "They stopped hitting the bids. They hit the bids at the hole, 95 cents, 90 cents, 85 cents, and then at 83 cents, the bid did not drop right away. Buy." Roll back the tape, please. and I showed them how the stock was different at 83 cents. We played the tape forward, and the stock soared 50 cents in 3 minutes. It was almost like watching review of a football game with a quarterback and examining how to read a defense. With a quarterback, though, I wouldn't say, "Buy at 83, the bids are not dropping," but rather something like, "Look to the post down the middle to split the safeties since they're in a cover two zone." I did not make up this buy. I did not know definitely where the stock was going, but I read the tape. And by so doing, I could see exactly where to start my position, and I knew that this trade offered me an excellent risk-reward opportunity with a 60-plus percent win rate, and those are trades we make every time. Apple, Steve Jobs's health. Let me share a pitch-perfect example of how reading the tape offers the best entry price for a position. At the end of 2008, there were rumors about Apple CEO Steve Jobs's health. Many had noticed during Jobs's 2008 WWDC keynote address that he was thin, almost gaunt, and offered a listless performance. Steve Jobs is one of the great CEOs of our time. If he were sick, what would this mean to Apple? On a personal note, it is disconcerting and downright sick that some speculate on the health of an innovative executive for personal gain, and many of the comments about his health beforehand were cold and inhumane. But his health would move the stock, and though it is the worst part of my job, I am a trader. Apple had maintained that Mr. Jobs's health was a private matter. On January 5, 2009, the company released a statement on Apple.com that Mr. Jobs had been suffering from a hormone imbalance for a few months. 9 days later, after the close, came this news from Briefing.com. Apple CEO Jobs announces medical leave of absence until the end of June, 85-33, down to 38. Update. Apple CEO Steve Jobs today sent the following email to all Apple employees. Team, I am sure all of you saw my letter last week sharing something very personal with the Apple community. Unfortunately, the curiosity over my personal health continues to be a distraction not only for me and my family, but everyone else at Apple as well. In addition, during the past week, I have learned that my health-related issues are more complex than I originally thought. In order to take myself out of the limelight and focus on my health, and to allow everyone at Apple to focus on delivering extraordinary products, I have decided to take a medical leave of absence until the end of June. I have asked Tim Cook to be responsible for Apple's day-to-day operations, and I know he and the rest of the executive management team will do a great job. As CEO, I plan to remain involved in major strategic decisions while I am out. Our board of directors fully supports this plan. Stock is halted. My first reaction was, I hope he is okay. This was very sad news. I have to admit my mind wandered, concerned about this country's brightest CEO, running one of our most innovative companies. But I had to focus. The stock was halted. During the halt, I considered strategies to trade Apple. I considered all the different ways that Apple might trade. Were there support levels if Apple gapped down? If it gapped down too much, would it bounce? When it reopened, what would panic selling look like? And on I ran through the different possible ways that Apple might trade. I made notes in my journal about Apple's most important technical levels. And then Apple reopened. The price action was opportunistic. And by reading the tape, chops short and chops long were available. Let's use this example in Apple as how reading the tape can lead the way for our determination of whether a stock is probably going up or down next. Apple reopened near 78, down over 7 points from its halt price of 85 and change. And the tape told us the story. It guided in its silent way. Bella, I'm going down now. Short me. Short me. Short me now. How? At 78, the offer was tested for size and would not lift. Apple kept printing on the offer at 78. My prints showed repeating green at 78, which means that the offer will not lift at this price. On our desk, we call this a held offer. And this was after the 7-point-plus gap down after the breaking news. The NASDAQ, the exchange where Apple trades, would not lift the 78 offer. Apple was a short. At 77, the offer kept coming back to 77. A bid could not hold 77. "Bella, I'm still going down, buddy. Why don't you short some more, champ?" the tape announced. And Apple traded lower indeed. At 76.50, NASDAQ would not lift the offer. This was another held offer. The same seller at 78 and the main seller at 77 was now selling at 76.50. "I'm still selling. Catch me if you can on the way down," teased the tape at this 76.50 offer. But then, like John the Apostle spreading the word of God to his followers, the NASDAQ seller lifted. "Follow me no more. I'm out of here," communicated this 76.50 seller. The pattern had changed. This repeating seller had disappeared. He had done all the downward guiding he could. This repeating, not lifting, and stepping lower seller was no longer on our box. What did this mean? Apple would most likely trade higher. So I got long. At 80.25, Apple met some new resistance, but this was some almost 4 points higher. When you learn how to read the tape, it is like the stock is talking to you. If you develop this skill and listen with an open mind, you will have an edge over your peers. Reading the tape offered an easy 1.5 point short and a simple almost 4 point rebound. There was a controlling seller. The tape indicated as much. And then he was no more, so Apple climbed higher. And prop traders with tape reading skills were profiting all the way to the bank. Brown Brad, Thinking Like a Trader. It is not always this easy to read the tape, but there are plays where it really is simple, and reading the tape will offer pattern recognition plays that you can exploit. On his last day as an SMB intern, Brad, our rugby-playing, investment-obsessed, soon-to-be Brown senior, sparked my interest in trading Synaptics, which had gapped down one particular AM. Synaptics, which had closed at 37-ish, was gapping down 19% on bad earnings. And after a few months with us, Brad had learned to trade, so his thoughts were now actually relevant. Brown Brad liked 28.50 for a possible bounce. And I started to get him thinking. My job is not to mandate, it is to teach our traders to think properly. Personally, I was thinking long. What class did they teach you that trade in, you Ivy League pretty boy? Basket weaving? I'm totally kidding here. Teasing is omnipresent on a prop trading desk. The stock is gapping down, and your dopey 28.50 is gonna get run over like roadkill. So Brown Brad and I started a discussion. I liked him finding this 28.50 level. This was excellent detective work. This was a technical level to consider. But then I prodded him to consider other alternatives. What if the stock held a little above 28.50 and did not reach this support? Did he have a plan to trade this deviation? What if the stock traded below 28.50 and showed a seller? Would he short? And on I offered different variations of how Synaptics might trade on this open. I wanted Brown Brad to be ready for each of these possibilities, each if-then scenario. See, maximizing your profits with scoring. I wanted him to be mentally agile. I wanted to make sure he would not suffer from confirmation bias. But before I finish this story with Brad, it's important that we examine confirmation bias a little bit more. Reading the tape can help us overcome this bias. Overcoming a confirmation bias. On July 24th, 2009, I remember battling confirmation bias while trading Amazon, the high-flying internet retailer. I define confirmation bias as processing information in the market so that it fits your preconceived opinions. It's the deep-down incorrect principle of being right rather than making money. When confirmation bias hits you headstrong, you overvalue all the information that backs your preconceived thoughts. You ignore all the information that counters your belief. Tweet Steenbab, Twitter handle, and Tweet the Kirk Report have previously written about confirmation bias in their blogs. I want to share how I had to fight this mind-crippling disease for traders on Amazon. And what a fight it was. Steve had written a killer blog the night before about how Amazon might trade on this day. 88.80 was the mother of all levels in the after hours, right after Amazon reported earnings. Those were some nice shorts for us, chops for us intraday prop traders. With this in mind, 88.80 was a significant resistance level for on the open. See figure 8.1 on your bonus material. And as per SMB protocol, Steve shared this important level with everyone. So what happened that day in Amazon? Amazon traded right to 88.80 and failed to push. How do you do it, Steve? We had been prepared with this significant resistance level. So I started a longer-term intraday short. I was not covering until there was a reason to cover. In the after-hours session, Amazon held 88.80 and then traded down to 85.85 and held the bid after significant volume. So we had our levels in place. And now I am short Amazon after the fall of 88.80 on the open, and I am just convinced that 85 is Amazon's next stop. Every held bid had to get run over. My confirmation bias was in the house. At 87.40, repeated buying offered support, and my confirmation bias strangled my thoughts. These guys are idiots for buying here. But having struggled with confirmation bias in the past, I observed my behavior. I needed to see the screen objectively. So I acknowledged my confirmation bias, quieted my mind, and just read the order flow along with my charts. Seeing repeated buying, I covered some Amazon, booking a quick buck and change. Below 87.40, I would reshort some more. But right now, for my trading system, Amazon was a cover for two-thirds of my position. But only through observing my thoughts, with my tape reading skills, and recognizing that I can suffer from confirmation bias, was I able to make a quality trading decision. Amazon did trade below 87.40, and I reshorted the two-thirds that I'd covered. But I was in complete control of my trade because I recognized my confirmation bias, let the tape talk to me, covered, then I reshorted when the reshort was proper. If Amazon had reversed at 87.40, I would have profited. When Amazon traded lower, I profited even more. Take that, confirmation bias. And then came 86. Now remember, my bias was for Amazon to trade down toward 85. What was this 86 buyer doing? Again, I thought, what an idiot. But Amazon would not trade below 86, and so I covered two-thirds of my position again. Another good decision. In another example of kicking confirmation bias in the proverbial ass, I was perusing Twitter into the close that day and noticed tweet downtrader chirp Human Genome Sciences Inc. My alerts were set for 15 in HGSI. I had concluded that it would not be ready for a new leg up until it held above 15. But then I started reading that tweet downtrader was long, and I typed up HGSI and gave it a look. At 1470, I did not like how the offers were not being cleared. The tape was not bullish, so I did not buy. But this second opinion, my willingness to accept another's point of view, offered another buying opportunity into the close. HGSI was back on my radar. And this is just another example of how I fought and conquered my confirmation bias during that trading session. We all fight confirmation bias, but it will harm our performance if we do not overcome it. Let the tape talk to you, and use online vehicles like StockTwits and your peers sitting next to you to gain second opinions. If you are fortunate, like I am, to be surrounded by talented traders, listen to their thoughts. This does not mean mimic other traders. Just consider another opinion. Do you know how many times I have heard Steve chirp a position that was the opposite of mine? That did not mean I automatically flipped my position. It just gave me some valuable color on what someone else was seeing with this stock. These other opinions will help you fight confirmation bias. Back to Brown Brad. In the pre-market, Synaptics violated 2850 support. Sellers held the offer below 2850. The tape was talking to us. Mike, I'm weak. I'm offering you an opportunity right here, buddy. Get short, Synaptics spoke to me. I listened and got short. Brown Brad watched. I'm not sure if we have clear rules on interns trading pre-market, but if we did, they would forbid trading before the market opened, as this is only for experienced traders. And when we opened, sellers held the offer, so I stayed short. This Yukon Husky doesn't fight the tape. And the bids were hit hard and offered little resistance straight down to 26. I made a chop on the short side. This is what happens when you listen to other smart people around you. Thanks, Brown Brad. Brown Brad will make a great trader in the near future if he so chooses. And he did so many things well. He was prepared, he found a great stock, he had levels to exploit. All because he read the tape. I have a dream. I have a dream. Not a Martin Luther King dream. Not even a Bill Ackman at a Target shareholders meeting dream. I have a Bella dream. A tape reading dream. I have a dream that one day on my trading desk, one of our traders approaches me, heck, even an intern like Brown Brad, and declares, "Thank you for teaching me how to read the tape. I hit the bids in a weak stock and saved myself from a 5-point rip." Perhaps by the time this book is published, my dream will be realized, but I doubt it. I have heard of every trade where all of our traders have exited too early. It probably happens every day. Someone whines, "I got out too early." While no one ever goes broke taking profits, the angst for not holding for longer, the frustration about wussing out of a trade, kills these guys. And yet, I have never been debriefed on a trade where one of our guys saved points for hitting the bids and getting one of the few prints before the stock plummeted. Never. This all reminds me of the Orny Adams joke in The Comedian, a documentary about stand-ups. I will paraphrase Orny's joke. 9 times out of 10, when I see an attractive woman walking down the street, I turn and take another look. 10 times out of 10, she does not turn around to check me out. Maybe one day a trader will approach. Oh, to dream. A rip saved. Here's an example of G-Man saving himself from a 20-point rip. He still hasn't thanked me. There was some great action in First Solar after reporting earnings in July 2009. The price immediately drove up from 175 to 187. See figure 8.2 on your bonus material. There was a pullback to 180 where the bid momentarily held before dropping out to 179. Before you could blink, it drove up to 190. This powerful drive got us to start thinking about where to buy on a pullback. G-Man was thinking 185. I, too, thought this would be his good spot to get long, and Steve agreed. But then something changed. A seller appeared at 187 and actively held the offer. Steve thought to himself that this was still 2 points from the 185 area, so perhaps a long would still work at that price. FSLR started to trade down from 187 as sellers stepped down to lower prices. Then what appeared to be the same seller that Steve saw at 187 was at 185.25 holding the offer. Buying at 185 was no longer an option for Steve, so he passed, but G-Man bought. Oh, to be young and bold. When the 185 bid dropped, it traded down to 180 in about 60 seconds. G-Man offered 184.75. Nothing. G-Man came lower to 184.25. Nothing. The tape showed no buyers and screamed, "Sell, G-Man, sell!" G-Man smacked the 181 bid. Next stop, 166. Great bid hit, G-Man. Great job of avoiding a disastrous rip. Did I mention he still hasn't thanked me? The tape spoke to G-Man. The 185.25 seller who stepped down from 187 told him that if 185 did not hold, then there was risk below. When this level dropped and his low offers were shunned by market plays at 184.75 and 184.25, he knew he was in trouble. The tape showed FSLR's weakness. And G-Man's only option was to try to get out with as small a rip as possible. And he did. By the way, G-Man re-entered FSLR and caught a 5-point up move from 166 to leave positive in FSLR and hit the gym. Now that's mental agility. Combat high-frequency trading. In the summer of 2009, there was a huge controversy in the media and Congress over high-frequency trading, HFT. HFT consists of computer programs automatically buying and selling shares faster than you can enter orders manually. Zero Hedge, a popular industry blog, www.zerohedge.com, 6 months young, exposed unfair advantages gained by firms using supercomputers to game the system. So successful was Zero Hedge that the 800-pound gorilla in any room deciding SEC policy, Senator Charles Schumer from the great state of New York, moved to ban flash orders, which are part of HFT's strategy. And thus they were so removed. Score one for the bloggers. Programs have been the nemesis of the intraday trader for many years, and many of those who claim you cannot read the tape anymore suffer from an inability to compete with these new algos. In all honesty, HFT does make it more difficult to read the tape. That's right, more difficult, not impossible, at least not to me. As soon as I dropped off this manuscript to Wiley, I started writing an article for SFO Magazine on this very topic. Talk about topical. Computer programs have been created by program traders to take the other side of trades made by active traders like me and force losses. I wrote about this in a blog, Rant, concerning a program I delightfully labeled the Buy the New Low program. G-Man calls it the Moron Piker Dopey PhD Has No Idea How to Trade program. Both titles are accurate, and the strategy is defeatable if you know what to do. Algorithmic programs that will be eliminated. Recently, I wrote about secondary plays and a program we call Buying the New Low. When a stock makes a new intraday low, algorithmic programs buy this new low because they predict that short-term traders will get short. These programs are betting that only light volume will enter the market when a stock makes a new low. They buy the new low, tick higher, and force the weaker short-term shorts to cover. Basically, they make pennies on many who are hitting the new lows in stocks. Let's discuss why this program, particularly below significant technical levels, has not worked, will never work, and will be eliminated by the market. I just want to say one thing about the dopey quants who employ this specific program. You are going to harm your firm. This program has not, cannot, and will not work. You need to take this program and toss it out with your leftover pizza boxes from Friday. For the retail traders, trading firms bring in pizza for traders on Friday. And let me be clear, I am only writing about this one program when stocks have broken very significant support levels. And obviously, we have a great deal of respect for the brilliant quant traders who run profitable, ingenious algorithms. One, it took us about a second to decode. Two, you can't play games like this below important levels. What are you going to do if a huge institutional order for millions of shares enters the market and you are caught long 200,000 shares as SAC Capital or T. Rowe Price hits the crap out of the stock for 5 points? Because a stock below a secondary price can cause panic selling. What exactly is going through those brilliant mathematical minds of yours? Did they teach you this at algorithmic trading camp? Do you have so little regard for the market that you will disobey fundamental trading rules to make a few pennies? Didn't firms like yours lose enough money when you tried these tricks when the subprime mortgage mess first hit? Your firms, or firms like yours, were decimated because you tried to get long, very weak stocks when they made new intraday lows and forced short-term traders to cover. Think CFC. Oops. For those at home, the programs bought the new intraday lows in the CFCs because they knew short-term traders would get short. The programs would buy and then quickly tick higher, trying to force the short-term day trader to cover. This did not work. Large institutional orders flooded the market. When the programs tried to uptick, the large institutional orders whacked some more of their bids and went low offer. The programs were forced to scramble and get out of their short-term positions. These programs recognized tremendous losses. These programs were eventually shut off by their firms. Didn't you, your friends, or quants like you lose enough money when you tried this nonsense next with the financials? The financials made new intraday lows, and you turned on the same dopey program. That didn't exactly work in GS, MER, LEH, BAC, and AIG. Again, oops. I know a lot of traders who cannot trade against algorithmic programs and have been forced out of short-term trading. All it takes is some effort and thought to learn how to trade against them. There are things we teach to combat the programs, and I personally don't have a problem with programs trying to make spreads and quick money. I do have a problem with quants who have such a fundamental disregard for the risk of buying stocks that are technically broken. I do have a lack of respect for strategies that disobey very basic fundamental trading principles, such as buying stocks below significant support levels. I do take issue with quants who keep trying failed techniques. To these quants, I understand that your math skills are genius, but superior math skills absent trading skills will not be rewarded by the marketplace. You are like an annoying gnat that requires nothing more than some bug spray. You are like that guy everyone can't stand on their pickup basketball team. You shoot every time down the court. You score a ton of points, and your team with more talent loses. And then you think you have had a good game. Develop a new program, or the market will eliminate you. As I mentioned, this was just a rant. I was purposely rantish. Steve called me in a huff, worrying about my incendiary tone after publishing these thoughts. I told him to go back to eating his oatmeal with walnuts and reading the Sunday Times. I wanted to start a discussion in the trading community. By the way, our blog traffic climbed 2,000% on that day. And I sure did, as this blog was linked and passed along to influential trading bloggers. Since the inception of programs, it has become harder to read the tape and thus trade because of HFTs. This is just something as traders we must learn to adapt to. The Buy the New Low program discussed previously is annoying but easily dealt with. But admittedly, there were more difficult programs which we compete against. Let's examine another day where adjustments needed to be made to trade against the algos. High Frequency Trading and Amazon. On July 24, 2009, we had such an example of HFT that I have learned to avoid. At 86.60, Tweet SMB Capital tweeted, "If you want a good example of HFT manipulation, watch Amazon around 86.60. HFT was dominating trading around this level. I could not read whether Amazon would trade higher or lower, and my charts were not definitive. A few times I thought I could read the tape and made plays around 86.60. The results? A short-term short in front of 86.60 ended in a loss of 25 cents, and my entry and exit prices were much worse because I couldn't get this seemingly liquid stock at the price I preferred. A long above 86.60 ended in a small loss. Okay, so now I see a pattern. The short-term longs are losing, and the short-term shorts are losing. And our losses are greater than normal. Now I had a choice. I could continue to pretend that I could compete against these difficult programs at this price. This undoubtedly would have concluded with me giving back all of my gains. Or I could choose a different path. And so I tweeted, "A great example also of when we shouldn't play in Amazon around 86.60 because of HFT manipulation. Wait for it to trend, then play. But not now." I waited for Amazon to pick a direction. Around 86.40, I could read the tape again. Amazon was most likely headed lower. I reshorted, and I caught a nice move down to 85.90. HFTs make our trading more challenging. There are setups and time periods we need to avoid, such as Amazon at 86.60. But trading is trading. We look for strong stocks and get long. We search for weak stocks and get short. Yes, HFTs shakes us out of more positions. Yes, it is harder to get stock. And yes, it would be nice if HFTs were not as prevalent. But guess what? HFT is here, and it will only grow. So as a trader, I must adapt But we as traders can limit their impact through our own trading. We can choose not to play when HFTs eliminate our edge. If you go to a local restaurant and they charge too much for what they offer, then most of us choose not to revisit. And we can do the same when we spot HFT. If you do not play, then they cannot take your money. Now, that does not mean that adjustments should not be made to HFT. There are solid arguments being proffered that changes must occur. Manipulation has no place in the markets, and we should all have access to the same order flow. The market should reward the best traders, and not those with an unfair advantage, such as access to exchanges some of us cannot reach. But we can all still compete, even with all this HFT. When we went to 1/16ths back in the day, I heard this was the end of intraday trading. When we transitioned to pennies, I heard that it was all over for the intraday trader. When hybrid was introduced, this was supposed to be the final nail for us. When programs entered our markets, this was supposed to manifest our dissolution. Some traders were forced out during each of these changes, but good traders adapt. They find new patterns to exploit. HFT will not be our ruination. It is just another market challenge that we must learn to overcome. I would like to see some changes made to HFT, but you know what? If things remain the same, then I will adapt. Today I am at the office, on Saturday, ripping through some charts for excellent setups on Monday. And now that SPY closed above 96.10 on heavy volume, I like the way the market is set up. This is a market overflowing with opportunity. I will figure out how to make money even with the HFT. I am a trader. See figure 8.3 on your bonus material. Look, algorithms and HFT are here to stay. As traders, it is our job to exploit patterns and profit. We don't complain. We don't enumerate all things unfair in the trading universe. First, it would take us too long to complete this list. Second, that does not make us money. We take money from the markets by finding patterns, improving our skills, such as tape reading skills, and adapting. Trading is a tough job. Algorithms and HFT make our job tougher, but we have learned to manage them, and so can you. Reading the Tape 101. There is only one side to the stock market, and it is not the bull side or the bear side, but the right side. Jesse Livermore. When we read the tape, we determine whether there are more buyers or sellers at a given price. We carefully watch order flow. We search for what we call held bids and offers and unusual volume done at the same price that creates a key intraday level. Let's get to some definitions. A held bid. A held bid is when a buyer buys 5 to 10 times more shares than we had expected on the bid. For example, if a stock creates a pattern where it does 5,000 shares on the bid before dropping, and then 50,000 shares print at the same price on the bid, and the bid does not drop, then this is a held bid. This is information that a huge order may be present. Why is this guy buying so much at the same price on the bid? Probably because he has a lot to buy. It is not 100% determinative that he has a huge order, but it is important information that he probably does. And if we spot a held bid often, we get long. An important intraday level. I make my best trades after I spot unusual volume at a particular price. We watch a stock trade, and every 5,000 shares causes the stock to move up more than normal. And then, say 250,000 shares are done at the same price, or around this price, and not in one singular print, for a stock in play. I am now interested. This is called an important intraday level. The trading play after spotting an important intraday level? If the stock ticks above this level and bids hold, then I am long. If the stock ticks below this level and the offer holds, then I am short. I am holding this trade for a longer-term intraday trade, say a few hours, instead of a few minutes. I expect the stock to move significantly away from this level. There was a huge battle. Now the fight is over, and now the stock needs to go find a new price. That might not be for a few points, so I hold. The key to being a tape reader is locating where most of the volume is being done intraday. This volume may not show up on your charts until after a significant move. Remember, charts are, at their core, lagging indicators. Reading the tape is a leading indicator. Use an unbiased principle to play both sides and be mentally agile. So I am long when bids hold and our stock is in an intraday uptrend, unless the stock is near significant technical resistance, and short when offers hold and our stock is in an intraday downtrend, unless the stock is near significant technical support. To be most accurate, there are a few exceptions to this, but this then would move beyond reading the tape 101. So often in the business of equities trading, there is a long bias, mostly perpetrated by the mutual fund and 401k industrial complex, and sales-focused commercials for T. Rowe Price of people running on the beach and the sound of a baseball bat hitting singles. Do not let the popular financial media and fee-hungry asset managers influence you. That's not what we do as traders. A long hold for me is 5 hours, not 5 years. Make sure this is in your head when reading the tape. Putting more trading plays in your quiver. Intraday prop traders caught a nice trade in Research in Motion on the open in the spring of 2009. We used an intraday support level from the previous trading session to start a core long in RIM the next day. Again, we based this long thesis in tape reading. Let's discuss. RIM had finished up over 20% on a Friday afternoon. RIM had trouble trading above 60 into the close, but still finished impressively. During the midday, 58.50 was a huge level. This level was violated only temporarily when the market was weak on this day. The moves through 58.50 looked more like a shakeout. Yet RIM did not trade below 58.31 on this Friday during this temporary move below 58.50. Then RIM reheld the 58.50 level and traded towards 60, where its momentum ran out of juice. After a long look at the points on this Friday, we came up with some important levels. 60 was resistance. 58.50 and 58.31 were support. On the following Monday, the market opened negatively, and RIM followed lower. RIM opened below the 58.50 level, traded below the next support at 58.31, so I got short. I noticed too much buying at 58.25 and 58.20. If RIM was weak, it would have traded down quickly below the 58.31 level. It did not. There was buying at 25 cents and 20 cents. There especially was some buying at 58.20. There was significant volume at 58.20. The 58.20 level held. See figures 8.4 and 8.5 on your bonus material. For new traders, this can be a tricky trade. RIM is below 58.31, the support level. Almost always we do not get long below support levels. But there was significant buying just below it. The tape communicated that RIM was strong. I flipped my position and started a core long position. RIM opened lower mostly because of the market. But significant volume was done at 58.20, and that level held. This is what an intraday bottom can look like. This is a great example of why learning how to read order flow is most important when you begin. Learning this teaches us that the move below the support level, 58.31, did not signal a true breakdown. I did not just blindly short below the technical support level and expect that RIM could only trade lower. That is not trading. That is called being stubborn and overly simplistic, if not arrogant. If only trading could be that easy. We trade with an open mind. We consider all the possibilities for how a stock may trade during our every trade. We constantly evaluate if we are just wrong with our positions. There was too much buying below the support level. There was a held bid just below the support level. The short time period RIM traded below the support level gave us pause to trust a break. So we got long. Now remember, RIM was exceptionally strong on the prior Friday. Stocks after days like that one Friday tend to trade much higher. Also, RIM is a stock that we can all understand. The BlackBerry is an awesome product that many of us use. This is an easy story to get as traders trading its stock. RIM is one of the top five technology companies, though this could change by publication as technology quickly changes. Top companies with easy stories to understand get bought en masse. With good news, hedge funds, mutual funds, the big banks, and retail investors want to own this stock. And I did, and others on our desk did as well. 60 was our next resistance level, so I lightened up in front of 60. 60 did not offer much resistance that day, so I reestablished a core long position. I lightened up near 62.75 into the close as this offered resistance. I reestablished above 62.75. I held my core into the close where I exited at 64. After all, RIM had shown us no evidence that the top was near. When and where to load up and still limit your risk. Not only can reading the tape offer trading plays that may not be apparent on your charts, but it will help you load up when appropriate. Everyone wants to load up. It's why we get into trading. Loading up defines the thrill of the kill. Once I heard a new trader utter, "I'm going to load up if ARCA holds the bid above 75 cents." She is learning. Learning to read the tape enables you to find spots where you can load up while contemporaneously limiting your risk. How so? I was trading AIG in the summer of 2009. So were a lot of prop slayers. In fact, my first show on StockTwits TV, the brainchild of Howard Lindzen and Phil Perlman, I discussed my AIG trading. During the broadcast, viewers were encouraged to send me messages directly to @SMBCapital on Twitter, which I tried to answer. It is a lot of fun conversing with this highly interested trading audience, and it was fun to see the desk trading so well at the start of August 2009. June had been a tough month. July was much better. And this August started like August of 2007, the beginning of the subprime crisis. And that was a great month. On one of our better days in August 2009, we traded AIG, the home builders, and ETFs. And AIG offered an excellent trades to hold that we should discuss. We spotted this by reading the tape around a key inflection point. AIG opened and quickly traded down a few points to 25. It started a range between 24.90 and 25.10. AIG seemed to break out above, but it was a fake breakout. And then AIG appeared to break down below 24.90, but that was a fake breakdown. Great! Those damn quants are trying to steal our money again. I started the day getting caught in a fake breakout and then a fake breakdown. Those PhD programming punks, geniuses, were at it again. But the trading day doesn't end until 4 p.m., so there was time to make it back. The nonsense of really just above 25 and below 25 continued some more. But I hung in there. I kept my losses at a minimum. And then it came. The bullish flag was created. A gift from the trading gods had been delivered. I had a setup to crush. AIG finally made an explosive move above 25.30, the intraday resistance, traded strongly on high volume to 25.75, and consolidated. As G-Man would say, it's party time. AIG met some resistance at 25.75, but really it was accumulating stock for its next up move. By reading the tape, I could see its strength. The pullbacks were nominal after an explosive up move. When I bid for stock, I was immediately cut in front of by anxious buyers. It was impossible to get hit on the bid, a bullish signal from the tape that AIG was soon to trade higher. Would it? AIG held above 25.75 finally. See figure 8.6 on your bonus material. By watching the bids, I saw that the buyers were now in control above 25.75. The bids were hit, but holding and stepping higher. Again, a bullish signal that buy orders were overwhelming the sellers, and we were soon to be headed higher. If the bids had been quickly hit and they dropped below 25.75, Then I would have had a signal that AIG was not ready, and G-Man's party had not yet arrived. But the opposite occurred. The bids held, and they were stepping higher. Now was it party time? Fortunately for G-Man and the rest of us, it was. AIG started an uptrend to 29. This was a trade you must be in. Not only did reading the tape offer an opportunity to add more size, but my risk was limited as my stop was just below the 75-cent inflection point. Furthermore, the held bid above 75 cents was my catalyst to pounce. So I knew to load up, had minimal downside, saw where and knew exactly when to load up because of my tape reading skills. This is a powerful trifecta for the intraday trader. Long above 25.75 as a trades to hold was the play, and I loaded up because the tape confirmed what my charts were indicating. But still, to be safe, I needed to see the bids hold above 25.75. I was able to buy three lots when the tape signaled that AIG would trade higher. And I limited my risk. If the bids dropped the 75 cents, then I would have hit out of two lots and started over. So now I had a large position. I had protection and a very tight stop that would have indicated my trade was not yet ready to work, and I never had to sweat. AIG quickly traded higher. I was in the money every second of my trade, all because of reading the tape. Have I not said that enough in this chapter? I'll say it again. All because of reading the tape. If I had just followed the charts, I may have bought 75 cents and got shaken out below 50 cents, as occurred. But since I waited for the bids to hold above this key inflection point, I did not get shaken out. I had a nice position, and I was never out of the money. That is being in a position of strength as a trader. And I made a chop. A love affair with charts. One of my favorite prop trainees at a nearby firm never bothered to learn how to read the tape. He loved his charts too much. All those deep reds and glorious greens were breathtaking to this young trader. To him, they never lied. But he was not trading. Trading is making plays where you have a statistical advantage of profiting. He was rolling the dice, effectively gambling. But it gets better. He did not even know how to read the charts. Like many developing traders, he thought he did, so he failed. Traders ask, "Can't I just read charts?" I received an email one night during an epic Cavs-Celtics playoff game. I have to admit I was more interested in the game than responding to this email, but I took a swing at it the next morning. "Hey, Bella, this morning when you were trading USO on the open and buying at the 32 level, initially, 32 had dropped, but you mentioned to someone else who was also trading USO that you did not hit out because you wanted to see the offer hold below 32. What was the reason for giving USO that little bit of time to see if it would hold an offer below 32, as opposed to just automatically hitting the bid once 32 dropped the way you normally would? Was it something you saw on the tape, or was it just because 32 was a really important level and wanted more confirmation than just a bid dropping for the first time?" My response: I bought USO just in front of 32 yesterday a few times. 32 has been a significant support level in USO recently. The first time USO traded up toward 30 cents, it slowed and I sold half. I bought some back when USO traded near 32 again. The bid dropped 32 and USO showed me the 98-cent bid. I did not hit it. Thus, the question above. I keep tight stops. I was long USO because 32 was the support level. So why didn't I hit USO when the bid dropped 32? Good question. My exit plan was not to hit USO until the offer held below 32 or the 31.95 bid dropped. Stocks often pretend to break levels and then trade much higher. I did not want to get shaken out in a fake breakdown. Further, I was holding USO for a large move. USO had bounced off of 32 the day before and hit 80 cents and even the hole a few times. This intraday there was some resistance near 32.50. So my upside at a minimum was 50 cents, perhaps 80 cents to $1. My risk reward was still more than 5 to 1 if I gave USO to 94 cents-ish. But there is a much bigger issue here, and it is something that we preach on our desk daily. Do not fall in love with charts. The order flow is more important than any chart. Use your trading skills to supplement your chart reading. Since I did not see an aggressive seller before the first time USO dropped the 32 bid, I did not hit out. If I had seen the seller, I would have been quicker to hit out. It is easier to learn how to read the tape, or at least learn how to read the tape for signals to buy or sell, than to learn how to trade with just charts. The traders I know who mainly trade off of the charts these days all learned first how to read the tape. And while they claim that they do not look at the level too much these days, many are just mistaken. They have so mastered reading the tape that they do not even understand that they are using it to lighten up or where to enter with their trades. G-Man was offering his thoughts on a particular trading day on his Friday spot on StockTwits TV. After his appearance, I heard through back channels that young ladies from the StockTwits community started asking, "Who is that G-Man guy?" Oh, to be young and single. G-Man discussed BBT. He highlighted a bullish chart pattern. BBT offered the opportunity to exit anywhere from 2650 to 27. See figure 8.7 on your bonus material. G-Man started his position at 2650 because he spotted the bid buying and holding at this price. He saw the bullish chart pattern and then found the best price with his tape reading skills. If he had started his position at 27, this would have completely changed the risk-reward for this trade. If he entered at 2680, he may have been shaken out of his position. But after he saw the buying at 2650, he loaded up and was able to catch a significant up-move with size. Who is better than you, G-Man? Using charts is an art, not a science. It takes years to become a great chartist. As an example, I knew one prop trader at it for a while. He never made money. We would periodically IM about trading, and I could tell he had no idea how to read the tape. He was absolutely mesmerized with his charts. He couldn't decipher a held bid from an orange. He failed. Another trader I knew, after a year, proclaimed, "I have trouble reading the tape. It just is too fast for me to pick up." He didn't make it either. I just don't get why people fall in love with their charts. There is so much more information from the prints, inside market, than the charts for short-term traders. And for long-term traders, reading the tape could dramatically improve their entry prices. How much more money would long-term traders make if they improved their entry prices, making more per trade? And how much more would they take home if they improved their win rate by starting their positions at better prices, decreasing the trades in which they were stopped out? Much, much more. Again, it is like people are more interested in staring at their pretty charts than in making money. If I told you I could offer information that would help you increase your win rate for trades, wouldn't that interest you? Gary B. Smith, in How I Trade for a Living, offered some very interesting thoughts on charts. Charts just weren't getting it done for me. They were great at telling me about the past, but were of little use in foretelling the future. Some who worship at the altar of charts may counter that the purpose of charts is not to predict, but to provide hints or clues to the future. Regardless of the semantics, I would have been much better off never looking at a chart. So it wasn't a tough decision in the spring of 1985 to throw out the charts and never consult them again. William Eckhart, from The New Market Wizards, written by Jack Schwager, commented, "Most things that look good on a chart, say 90%, don't work." But with reading the tape, you can profit from day one. In fact, it's very simple. When we find a stock in an uptrend and then spot a held bid, this is a long. Easy, no? It will work more times than not. When you spot an important intraday resistance level cleared, you get long. Again, not difficult. And on the first day you trade live, you can crush this simple pattern. Mind you, do not discount the use of charts. We use them all the time. But it is hardest to start your career by relying solely on the charts. And the guys who do are great chartists. But remember, They have deeper pockets, so they can withstand a drawdown that you might not be able to. Please understand just how good they are at reading.